morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world.
Hello and welcome to DevelopPod, the podcast from the IATEFL Teacher Development Special Interest Group. I'm your host, James Taylor, and on today's episode, we are talking conferences, specifically online conferences. I think one of the big changes for many of us that's happened in the last year is the fact that conferences, just like everything else, have moved online. And this is, of course, true for the upcoming IATEFL conference as well. So we got together, that's me, Tyson Seaburn, who is our TDC coordinator, and we're joined by our special guest, Catherine Bielsborough from the Materials Writing SIG, to talk about this change, the things we miss about face-to-face events, the advantages of online events, and how we see conferences changing in the future when everything goes back to normal, whatever normal means. So let's begin by talking about something I think is kind of the elephant in the room. Let's deal with that first of all. We're all big fans of face-to-face events here. So, Tyson, what are you going to miss? What have you been missing most about the absence of face-to-face events?
I think the main thing that I miss is probably just spending the time together with the people that I care about and that I learn from and enjoy being around, because that's basically the once a year time that I get to do so offline. And we have those, you know, sort of formal but also informal kind of conversations about what we just saw or who we just listened to or the topics that are happening and what we're going to do later, possibly even in the evenings. And those are the things that I really miss about face-to-face.
Oh, definitely in the evenings. Let's not kid ourselves. It's definitely in the evenings. Kath, what about you?
I agree with everything Tyson said. For me, it's the spontaneity that happens in a face-to-face event. So something like IATEFL, where you might bump into somebody that you've worked with, but you haven't seen them for ages. So you go off for a cup of tea and they tell you about something that's happening. And another aspect as well, which just occurred to me, that's different with online and face-to-face is that when I go to an event like IATEFL, that's it. I do nothing else usually for those days. So I completely 100% focus on what's happening. And when I'm at home and I'm attending something online, there is a tendency to try and fit in all the normal day-to-day things like housework and things. So for me, it's really nice, you know, eating in restaurants and things that you might not even think about, but you miss.
Yeah. You're so right. I mean, you're totally immersed in sort of the culture of the conference.
Yeah, completely.
Right? And not distracted at all.
Yeah, and there's like, it really is like a kind of a bubble, especially a conference like IATEFL, which happens over a number of days, right? You're just completely immersed in that event, and there really isn't anything else going on in the world, is there really, while you're there?
No.
Like, you just really don't know what's going on outside your bubble, because it just takes up so many hours. I mean, it starts pretty early in the morning and it usually finishes fairly late at night.
Also pretty early in the morning it finishes.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
There's the for me as well, personally, going back to the UK is a big thing. So I usually tag on some extra days and visit my family or a friend. And so I haven't done that either. So I've missed out on those extra bits, which kind of, you know, when I'm planning my trip to IATEFL, I'm also thinking about seeing my sister, my brother, whatever. So there's all that.
Yeah, I'm the same, right? Coming from Brazil, you know, it's not like I can come back that often. So I usually come back once a year, and that's the way I do it, right? I come back like a week earlier than IATEFL, see my family and friends, and then the second week I go to IATEFL. So you're right, it's not just that trip is not just about the conference, but about a lot more than that.
It's the same for people like me too, though. I mean, it's not like I'm visiting family in that way. Of course, you're my family, of course, right, in a way.
Well,
but that sappy stuff aside, you know, it's my chance to get over to Europe And when I do go to Europe, because I'm from Canada, I tag on usually an extra little vacation-y time to visit a different country in Europe that I haven't been to. So, you know, we all do that sort of, let's make a thing out of it, you know, not just a conference thing sometimes.
Yeah, and taking it back to the actual sort of content of the conference, of course, what I think there's a kind of parallel with the online teaching in a way, in that you can sort of deliver the content of a lesson really well effectively online or face-to-face. But then there are other elements of being in a class, which is very difficult to replicate online, which are the more sort of social elements, right? And I think that conferences are like that, worse off by being online. But the experience of being there with other people is very difficult to replicate online. Of course, we'll find out this year with ITEFL and some other events how well we can replicate that. But I do think there's a parallel there.
It just occurred to me that one positive thing about online compared to face-to-face conferences, it's easier to leave. It's easier to
really
to
engaging
leave.
Session.
Slip quietly out of the door, you mean?
I mean, that's a bit of a negative way of thinking, but sometimes I have found myself in the wrong place, you know, thinking something is going to be, you know, suitable and, you know, motivating for me, and it isn't. And I really dislike, you know, leaving a room with when somebody's already started a presentation. But online, it's quite easy to turn off your video camera and, you know, go and do something else.
Oh, so you stay in the room just with your camera off, as opposed to actually leaving the entire Zoom meeting?
I haven't actually done it at all, but it's just occurred to me that I could do that. Yeah. Isn't that what kids do when they're
Well, since Kathy mentioned one of the advantages of online conferences, let's focus on that now. So, Tyson, do you have any other ideas for the advantages of online conferences?
Well, I mean, I think the most obvious is the fact that you don't need to travel. I mean, traveling obviously is a good thing. I mean, we've just talked about that. But the fact that I can attend a wider variety of conferences than I normally would be able to has been helpful. Like, you know, doing yours in Brasilia not too long ago, a year ago now, it was the first time I was ever able to do that. And same with TESOL Spain, you know, I was able to be there. Belta, I mean, I would have probably traveled to Belta anyway, but this just gave me the opportunity to go to conferences I hadn't normally been able to. So that's one.
Mm-hmm. One for me, one huge benefit of an online conference, when it's a big conference as well, I've often been in a situation, I mean, I spoke earlier about running out of a talk, but sometimes I've been in a situation where there are two or three simultaneous presentations going on, and I really find it difficult to choose which one to go to. And I've often thought, you know, if only I could be in two places at once. And with an online event, usually they make available later the recordings, so you can actually see 100 presentations instead of just 10, if you were that way inclined, you know.
True.
So that's another.
And even to go back to your other point about like discreetly leaving, you know, if you were in a situation where there's two you wanted to go to and one you did go to was like not panning out so well, you could kind of just jump from one to the other without having to like walk all the way across campus or something like that, you know.
Yeah. I think as well, we speak from a position where we're quite privileged in that we're able to go to the UK every year for ITEFL. And obviously one of the big advantages of online events is the fact that it becomes a lot more inclusive for people all over the world who realistically can't get to the UK, whether that's financially or even just because of the time, right? And getting the time off work. And I think this is a huge benefit. And it'll be interesting to see in time how that manifests, you know, like whether there's how it affects the attendance in terms of the changing demographic of the attendance. Then these events will truly become much more international than they are at the moment. I hope so.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, we have yet to see, actually, right? You know, because this upcoming IATEFL conference, just as an example, we don't know who's actually attending it. You know, is it the same group of people that would have? And chances are, to some degree, that's true because of the delayed tickets or the deferred tickets. But, you know, is it something where people are thinking, hey, this is finally my opportunity to go to IATEFL or whatever conference and going to it or not? I guess that will be interesting to find out.
I think that there are different groups of people. I think that there are definitely people who will be thinking, finally, I can go to IATEFL, whereas before I couldn't, it was too far, etc. But I do think that we need to consider ways of making conferences like IATEFL more accessible. We've already done it. We can do it online. So that's one half of the problem, if you like, the challenge. But the other half for me is that in some countries, people don't have the money to pay the same kind of fee that we pay to go to IATEFL. Now, I think that if we were to think creatively about this, there are lots of ways that we could do something. And I know that we have scholarships and this kind of thing, but I'm talking about hundreds of people, not one or two. So I think, you know, by people volunteering to pay a bit more, that could then be used to, you know, this kind of thing, we can make it even more democratic. And I'd like to see that happening in future, at future events. I mean,
that is happening, at least I think so, is the moderators for this particular IATEFL conference don't need to pay the same fees, obviously, as everybody else. So theoretically, if that were not people like me moderating, which I'm not, by the way, taking up that space, then that would be one example of doing that.
Kath, I'm wondering how you feel about online events compared to face-to-face events as a presenter. I mean, you've done a lot of talks and workshops. How do they compare for you?
I get equally nervous before a face-to-face presentation as I do before an online presentation. But I think, the buzz that you get from a live presentation is pretty, you know, that thing at the end when people come up to talk to you about ideas and this kind of thing, well, hopefully if things go well, I get really, really excited about that. It kind of makes me feel, that what I'm doing, that, you know, there's a point to it all. I suppose this is about what happens at the end of a presentation, isn't it? Because at the end of a presentation online, you just switch off and disappear.
Well, you get thousands of thanks that go up the chat box.
yeah. So, but it's definitely, it's a different experience, but I think both are valid. And I think that the good thing about giving an online presentation is that the numbers are not limited. So you're not stuck in a room where you've got a limited number of 30 people or 60 people or whatever. So you might have, 100 people, or I suppose in some, sometimes you are limited, but not to the extent that some of these small rooms have been in the past where, I think that makes a difference.
I think just to jump on that a little bit, As a speaker too, I think online, there's this perception kind of sometimes that online can't be as interactive somehow than a face-to-face. And I mean, I typically don't give sort of workshop-y things. I do give talks more than workshops. But I find in an online space, I actually can involve the audience in a talk more so than in a face-to-face scenario. Because if there's a 100 people in the audience, it's very difficult to sort of get much, except from maybe the front rows worth of, eyes and nods and stuff like that. Whereas I try to, because it's an online situation, you want to keep people engaged anyway. So you can use the tools of Zoom, for example, like polling and that kind of thing much more easily to get instant feedback sometimes, or participation.
Yeah, I feel like maybe, again, I'm going to draw the parallel with teaching again, which is I feel like the people who are really good at presenting online know how to make it interactive. They know how to use the tools. And I've seen people presenting face-to-face who've been very effective at not involving the audience at all, right? So I don't think it's a kind of a given in either format. You know, it depends on if you know how to use the tools and what's in front of you.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, even when I was thinking about this initially, I was thinking, oh, well, you know, there's a certain amount of like concision that you need to have in an online thing because, you know, the timing is exact. But then actually that's the same in a face-to-face situation too. You either blow that time as a speaker or you actually make really good use of that 30 minutes, for example. So it's not actually an advantage.
I think as a participant as well, this interaction thing, I mean, obviously it's very different if it's online or face-to-face, but if you're sitting, just thinking about myself, if I'm sitting in a room with a lot of people and there comes a question and answer point at the end, I might feel a little bit reluctant to ask a question when I'm actually there with everybody sitting around me and looking at me, whereas online I might feel much bolder and think, you know, I'm going to ask a question. Nobody can see me. Nobody can, or you know, it's just different. Obviously, the interesting thing about all of this, of course, is that it's all so new that we still don't have any kind of, you know, I imagine research is being done as we speak. And eventually we'll know what the big differences are. But we don't at the moment. We've just got our own perceptions.
Well, to some degree, I think that's true. But I mean, webinars have been a thing for a decade at least, right? So there's, you know, it's not like it's completely, we were just thrown online and we've never done any online stuff like this exactly. But, you know, in terms of big events, you're absolutely right.
So Tyson, you're a conference organizer as well. How do you feel about the difference between online and offline events?
I have some experience with doing online events even before the whole pandemic started, because we had been doing them for a while as TDSIG anyway, but and I've done a few sort of locally, but I find online a teensy bit easier, I think, in some ways. I mean, because I don't have to think about things that are happening in a completely different country than where I'm actually situated. You know, like for our pre-conference event, normally I have to really think through the room or the food or, you know, organizing people when they're going to be there and trying to understand that stuff about a place I haven't even been to myself. And so that can be very complicated. Whereas an online scenario, of course, it's much more of a level playing field. Everybody's sort of got the same level of knowledge to a certain degree. But on the flip side, as you obviously know, James, too, is when you are the one who has more experience with the online environment, more people rely on you to actually have the answers and do most of the things. And sometimes you do kind of take on that responsibility, you know, sort of like a mom in a way, going like, well, you know, it's easier if I just do it myself instead of explaining it to other people how to do something. So there's an upshot and a downside probably to both, really.
I'm in the process of organizing the MORSIG pre-conference event online. And it's the first time I've ever organized anything, you know, quite like this online. And I keep feeling like I've forgotten something because I don't seem to be as busy. I don't know whether that's because of the nature of this particular event, that we already kind of organized it and then it got delayed and then it was, you know, so lots of the work was done previously. I'm finding it it's for me, it's another skill that I'm learning, to be honest. So I'm looking at it that way. It's something that I hope will go well. And I feel very, very responsible to the speakers because some of them feel a little bit anxious about the whole thing. And obviously I feel responsible to the SIG, and it's my baby, if you like. But it's something that I'm enjoying as well and looking forward to. And actually the pre-conference event for us is on my birthday. Oh. I know. And at first
well, let's
I
hope
thought,
it goes
oh,
well.
No. I hope it does. And in one way, it's kind of special and almost as if that was meant to happen, you know?
So, well, at least you're going to get a whole bunch of people singing happy birthday to you, like live, probably. Well, I suppose you would have that in the regular pre-conference event too. I think something just occurred to me actually that's a real pain in the butt about online stuff is actually the time zones, like making sure and coordinating a time zone that works for most people. You know, when we did the web carnival, that was a longer event actually than the pre-conference event that we're organizing now. And so some people were just inevitably going to miss different parts of it. And of course, when you're paying for something, not that they were for the web carnival, but for the pre-conference event, having access to a recording afterwards isn't quite the same value for money in terms of paying. And so you're also then trying to like consider, okay, well, how much time can people actually sit in front of their computer and go to a conference, you know, like, you know, that's another factor. So that I find sort of one of the most agonizing decisions is to actually time the event.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. So we've had this period where everything has gone online. After we're going to go back to some kind of normality. Well, I'm curious about what kind of normality do you think we're going to return to? Right? Do you think everything's just going to go back the way it was before? Or do you think that the way we have events and conferences in the future will change? Kath, what do you think?
I think it will definitely change. I don't think we can go back exactly to the way things were before. People talk about the inevitability of having kind of hybrid versions, but I mean, even that can be interpreted in a million different ways. I'd like to think that we take some time to reflect on things and to plan things carefully and not just jump into whatever's going to happen next, but probably we won't do it that way. We'll probably do a few things wrong in the future. So maybe, you know, I think there'll be a lot more local. When I say local, I mean national, I suppose. National events and let fewer international big events. It's impossible to know exactly, isn't it? But I think that we're discovering the advantages and the amazing things that we can do with technology. I think we are surprising. I am constantly surprised by the creativity of people who are doing things online in such an amazing way. And that's not going to, we can't go back now. We've already started doing it. So it's quite exciting, I think, the future. Quite exciting. So I'd like to think that there still will be some traveling and meeting up and the rest of it. But I'm not sure that we'll have huge conferences with people traveling halfway around the world to attend. So maybe we'll have a situation where we have camera link-ups with smaller teaching organizations in different countries, et cetera, so that we can organize things globally, but linking up, like kind of like the Eurovision Song Contest that just sprung to mind.
I think that for the bigger conferences like IATEFL or TESOL or what have you, I think there is no going back to exactly the same way. I think the, like Kath mentioned, but maybe more specifically, I feel like there could be, you know, half of the conference participants and speakers are just online, and another half of them could be a face-to-face scenario. Like, you know how we used to have a certain number of sessions were recorded or live streamed, I guess. And so people at home could watch those things. Well, that was really for participants and very few participants, really, comparatively to the entire conference. I can imagine more speakers being involved in that now. So having an online platform where some of the speakers or many of the speakers deliver their sessions online to sort of counter the ones that are face-to-face. So there will be both sort of happening sort of simultaneously, some for people at home and some for not. I mean, that would be my initial guess, but I do think that, you know, like we started off with, there's things we miss about that face-to-face situation that I can imagine to some degree we're just going to want to go back to the way it was, you know.
Yeah, I anticipate that at the beginning there'll be when, you know, the first opportunity that people will get to go to do something face-to-face, there'll be a kind of deluge of opportunities and that people were desperate to do it. And I hope when that happens, and it's totally understandable, I feel the same way, but we don't forget the advantages of doing things online, which are mainly for me is the accessibility to people who can't, won't be able to rush back to the face-to-face event wherever that happens in the world. I think one of the main barriers between for the hybrid events are the fact that most teachers associations events around the world are not run by, they're run by volunteers, right? Mm-hmm. Teachers who are putting on these events. And I think that the skills that you require to put on a face-to-face event and the skills to put on an online event are relatively easy to acquire, right, from a technical point of view. But to put on a kind of hybrid event where you have some sort of face-to-face elements and online elements working together, and it's got to work for both the people live in the room and the people online, technically that's much more of a challenge. And I wonder if we have the skills to be able to do that, as we're not professional conference organizers with platforms and everything. So that might be a barrier that stops us from sort of going into that brave new world. I don't know.
Well, it would have to be something quite clear cut in terms of how it was managed, for sure. You know, like, we couldn't just half-heartedly go into it and saying, okay, we're going to have 50 sessions online today and 50 face-to-face, and let's just sort it out. You know, like, it's going to have to be much more organized than that, for sure. But yeah, I just imagine there will be something like that.
I would imagine that every other profession, if you like, will be thinking, you know, along the same lines as we are. And I think that probably we will be led by other people running conferences, whether they be scientists or, you know, designers or architects or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that we just need to, I always say about my own professional development that I often find that I've learned something from a place where I never would have expected to have learned it, you know? And I think that's a message, you know, we just need to keep our eyes open and see what other people are doing and how they're doing it, and all the good stuff will probably filter down and we'll be able to take the best of, let them make the mistakes. And yeah, we can just pick up all the good bits.
That's
It'll be a
such
challenge.
A good idea. I mean, that's such a good maxim for us in general, you know, as a profession, like, what, don't isolate ourselves from what's going on elsewhere and learn from it, for sure. I mean, I tend to think the one of the biggest barriers is going to be figuring out the financial aspect to it. You know, that to me seems like the biggest adjustment, because you can't just simply pay the same thing as a face-to-face and an online. Yet there's so many free online things. So how do you sort that out, you know, so that it's value for money and it's also something worth paying for? I guess that's the same thing, actually.
That's a really interesting discussion. And before we bring it to an end, I just want to give you the opportunity to plug your respective events to our listeners. So, Tyson, you can go first. Can you tell people about the TDSIG PCE?
Sure. So, I mean, chronologically, ours is pretty late, comparatively speaking. So our PCE is a post-conference event this year. So it still works acronym-wise, but it's July 31st. and it is on alternative forms of teacher development. So we will be doing some of the similar things we would have done face-to-face in terms of the number of speakers. So we have four speakers from different parts of the world, and they're teachers themselves. And so rather than, you know, having academics, for example, tell us what is teacher development, and then, you know, theoretically we have to figure that out and how to apply it, these are, you know, teachers who have organized their own teacher development projects, such as action research or dialogic TD. And so we'll be together on that day going through what it means to do your own TD project and make it more localized and make it something sustainable and practical for your own environment.
Sounds great. Can't wait. And Kath, can you tell us a bit about the MOSIG PCU?
I can, yeah. So we've got our MOSIG pre-conference event on Friday the 18th of June. And that's the same day as it was going to happen when it was going to be face-to-face. So we decided to just keep the date. And the title, our title this year is Practical Tools and Tricks of the Trade, Sharing Our Expertise. And it's quite an exciting lineup because we've got somebody who's an expert in writing syllabuses and curriculums. We've got somebody who's an expert on page design and layout. So it's not just writing, it's, you know, it's editing, it's all kind of all different aspects, but very, very practical. We decided to, we put our heads together and we just thought, what would we like to learn as, I'm talking about the committee, yeah? Mm-hmm. So we, and we thought, well, I'd like to learn about this and I'd like to learn about this. And we thought, well, let's see if, you know, this will work. And we've had a very good response so far, lots of interest. So we're all quite excited.
Sounds very
about
cool.
It. And
yeah, sounds very good.
Yeah, hope so.
And of course, they're on different days as well.
Yeah, right? There's an advantage to online.
Mm-hmm. Our listeners can go to both. So a big thank you to Tyson and Catherine for joining us on this episode of DeveloPod. If you want to find out more information about either of those PCE events, then there are links in the episode description. So that brings us to the end of the show. If you want to stay in touch with us, then look for TDSIG or IATEFL TDSIG on your social networks. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you want to make sure that you get every episode of this podcast, then make sure you subscribe. It's available on all podcast players, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button and the next episode will appear when it's available. Until next time, my name is James Taylor, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of DeveloPod.